Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 305 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Leonard, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing this evening?
I'm doing fantastic.
And I say this evening because we don't record this in the evening, but the new time that this comes out is the evening.
Yes, that's right. Special new release time when the show drops, as the kids say.
Right. And we're no more waiting. I think I might have mentioned this on Twitter last week. But no more waiting, no more scheduled time. Once the show is done. It's going out live. If that means late Tuesday night, if that means early Wednesday morning, whatever it is, man, we want to get these shows in your ears as quickly as possible. After dark, not so much.
What? After darks are a delight, Leonard.
A delight to me, apparently. Mm-hmm. So we actually have a bunch of comic stuff to discuss here this week. Still more fallout from San Diego Comic-Con, this time targeting those dirty cosplayers.
Uh-oh.
Speaking of dirty, all sorts of art discussion, whether it be old art being repurposed and people not getting credit, or people who are known to attempt to purchase things to keep it out of other people's hands might be up to his old tricks again.
What?
And some news stories in regards to the way that Marvel Comics will be changing again forever.
Uh-oh. This time forever.
This time forever. Of course, we also have convention news. We also have digital sales and freebies to discuss. And what we read from this past week, which was Civil War II, number 4, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, number 1, and a preview book that we'll be discussing as well. I always like to tease those.
Me,
like we're a real-time radio show.
Me, I just blurt them out.
Right. And also what we're most looking forward to coming out this week. And our question, best blank, which this week was Daredevil, and what next week is going to be as well as the very, very end of the show, discussion of the most recent episodes of Outcast and what everyone has came to listen to, the season finale of Preacher.
Oh, gripe bombs aplenty or none. Let's find out.
Right, let's see how the poll went.
I will save that. I have it right here in my hand.
No polls to the face.
No polls to the face.
No staff to the face. My apologies.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what it was.
You're terrible. But I'll save that poll for the end.
As a placeholder title. Oh, so let's get right into things here, Todd.
Sure thing.
So San Diego Comic-Con has decided to implement a rule, a guideline, a something, that if you want to take pictures of cosplay-type people, you cannot do it in the aisles, on the main floor, or interview cosplay people, or anything else like that. They've set up designated areas where you can do that. There's always been stories of people with their giant God of War or Halo costumes, or things with giant retractable wings taking up entire aisleways on convention floors, and San Diego is attempting to do something about that, I guess.
Yes. And also, when you're at a show like us, Leonard, we're not allowed to even interview, like for a podcast, people in the aisles anymore. You have to take them off to the side and do stuff like that, which we never did. We always did our interviews with friends of the show like James Asmus or Gail Simone or Mark Waid, either at a table or up against the wall, out of the way.
Right.
So, like, we're ahead of the curve.
End up against the wall.
That's right. We put Mark Waid up against the wall and man, by knife point, interviewed him about Archie.
I was going to say we interviewed them at knife point.
That's right. We're starting to get on the same mindset. I don't like that.
It's only been 305 episodes.
That's right. I think we're finally hitting our groove. But, yeah, and I always liked it because, you know what? I have nothing against cosplayers, but, like, this was always my biggest gripe. And when people would say anything about them, they're like, oh, you're just against cosplayers. You say, you know, I believe, what is it, a gatekeeping and stuff like that. I'm like, no, it's fact. If you take one person in a fanciful costume and 20 people want to take pictures of them, it's never 20 people all take a picture at once. It's you're in the aisle. Three people are like, oh, that's a great book. Can I take a picture? Yes. Click, click, click. As they go to walk away. Well, wait, could you? And all this time, I'm trying to go get, like, you know, my booster, my handmade booster gold socks next aisle over. And you can't get there because they're there. And then if you walk through the picture, oh, people go crazy. You're rude. I'm like, well, if they have these like cool backgrounds and stuff that people can take pictures against and you want to take cosplayers there, that's great. And then like you said with the wings, I had two people at a con two different times. One person with like a scythe walking around, poked me in the eye. And I had one guy dressed as the Joker dragging a stuffed human, like a stuffed dressed as Robin with the, you know, he has the crowbar in his hand and he's walking through a crowded con. I step on his little dolly and he goes crazy. And I'm like, just like, come on, like, let's all be cool to each other.
His little dolly.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this, the multiple times, like, you know, the conventions where we've gone to, or at least I've gone to, where there's a multitude of cosplayers lately has been Baltimore. And any time that we would go to get pictures with cosplay-type people, it would always be in either that big upfront area where you first come onto the con floor, where it's just like a kind of a more open area, mm-hmm. or as far up against like a wall or a booth or a something so that it's not blocking anyone's way.
Well, you're courteous, that's why.
Well, let's not go crazy, Todd. Some people would say I'm history's greatest monster.
No, you're a nice guy and you like everybody.
Trademark?
TM?
Question mark?
Question mark?
Trademark? Question mark?
Let's get them all in while we're working at it. But
no bingo card for this show yet.
Not yet.
So the other bit of news that I wanted to mention, of course, was a follow-up on a previous story from the show. I should have looked at what episode it was where we discussed this. But a few months ago in Loot Crate, one of the things that they gave out was an Infinity Gauntlet oven mitt. Mm-hmm. And it did the one thing that oven mitts are supposed to protect you from. It was burning people.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently with customers giving... their reports, there was over 240 instances Ugh. Of people suffering burns or their oven mitt just melting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. So Loot Crate has decided that you can get something for their failure. You will get a mystery t-shirt and a Simpsons keychain for returning the mitt or a picture or video of you destroying it.
No. I would keep mine just as a, and not right. use it.
Now, did somebody get this for you?
No, I don't have one. So I'm sad. I'll never have an Infinity Gauntlet oven mitt, or as I call it with this, as I've said before on Twitter, the Infirmary Gauntlet.
Oh, boy.
You just, psh, and you know, off to the infirmary. But no, I didn't get one. Josh got one. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
oh, Josh, winner of our Captain Marvel Carol Danvers art contest.
That's right. Big winner, chicken dinner. Yeah, he got one. So I don't know if he's keeping his or not. And then, so I want one so I can make those Thanos chocolate muffins that was in the little book you got with it.
But then if you use it, you'll burn your hand off, Todd. Then you won't be able to eat the muffins. Oh,
I have two hands, Leonard.
All right.
I have a burning hand and an eaten hand.
And I'm just reading over the recall summary, mm-hmm. and it says, name of product, Marvel Thanos Infinity Gauntlet Oven Mitt. Hazard, oven mitts lack thermal protection.
Oh, boy. Isn't, like, the whole point of an oven mitt is for thermal protection?
What's that dumb meme, and I hate memes, and I hate this even more, where it's like, you had one job.
That's right.
You know?
Memes are awesome. We need more Long Box Heroes memes.
Nope.
We need more.
Take that up with
what?
Take that up with Studebaker. That's his neck of the woods.
That's right. We'll get him. All I know is it's memingless to get him to do that.
We've reached a new low.
Or high, depending on which way you look at it.
All right. So this is the Marvel portion of the show, and do with this what you will. So also from San Diego, there was some controversy over, I guess, some Bill Sienkiewicz art of Dazzler that was being repurposed.
Mm-hmm.
One of the giveaways that Marvel had was a tie-in to the X-Men Apocalypse film. We're in a deleted scene. Someone was purchasing the Dazzler album with that same art. So Marvel reproduced that art. And did they do it just like as kind of like a faux album? I don't know if there was an actual album in there.
Basically, what it was, I guess, a cover to Dazzler, maybe, where there was an album cover on the cover. So they used that, and then the sleeve was, I guess, empty. I don't know if it had, like you know, song titles on the back or whatever, but there was no record in it. But basically, the front of it was the art that was used on the cover of either a Dazzler or an X-Men comic. Right now, it escapes me.
It was a Dazzler comic. So, because this was used without Bill Sienkiewicz's notification, thank you, or credit, he might have went crazy.
Yep.
And I think rightfully so.
I think he has some valid points, and some he doesn't. So I think, like, credit, yes, should be on the cover. There should be a little Sienkiewicz, you know, the signature if he did it. Or on the back, you know, art provided by Bill Sienkiewicz. I'm fine with that. He was paid for the art. Now, granted, if they were putting it on things that they were selling.
Right. That's another.
That's a whole nother Megillah. But these were giveaways. So there's really no royalties or any money to be made on it. And since he was already paid for the image, you know, once, I don't know if on other things like other giveaways, if it's pre-used art, you get money for it. It's all in your contract. That's something like that. Like, if somebody, you know, was like, oh, we're doing this giveaway, please, you know, make us a new image, you get paid for it. So that was kind of the one thing I was like, not that I would always ask for money if they'll give it to you. But I was kind of like, it's not like they were selling this product and just not giving him any, you know, royalties off it.
Right, right. That's a much better point, I think. But it was just, you know, kind of, you know, how things are done today with Marvel. And I just assume once you do art for Marvel, they're going to use your art in perpetuity.
Yeah, but I even know from certain listeners and friends of ours who've done art for Marvel that they've gotten checks for, like, shirts. Like, I know somebody got a check for a Venom shirt because they used the art on it at one point. Whether that's changed, I could be wrong, and I might get a text in a day or two after the show drops, be like, you were completely wrong. But I vaguely remember that happening, that, like, you're supposed to get a little bit of something if they use your art on something that they're selling.
Right.
So
since this came out, I don't think there is, has been any updates or news or otherwise in regards to this, but, you know, if we hear anything, of course, we'll keep you posted. Speaking of original art, there is a Han Solo miniseries currently ongoing from Marvel. We're, what, two issues in?
Two, the third one hasn't come out yet, I don't think.
Right, two issues in. The artist, Mark Brooks, recently noted that he was contacted by George Lucas through Lucasfilm, saying that he wants to purchase every original page from the first two issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is very interesting because I think this is the first time that this has happened where George Lucas has reached out, at least, you know, that it's been made public, to purchase any of the art from any of the Star Wars comics.
Right, and I guess it was in his contract that he gets first right of refusal on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if they even, like, even Mark Brooks was kind of saying, it's like, well, I'm, you know, people wonder, like, how much could you gouge him for it? But then if you give him a price and he turns it down, you can't sell it for lower on the free market than you offered him. So,
right.
So it's like, oh, well, I'll get $10,000 a page, you know, because Lucas has some of those shekels in his back pocket. And it's like, well, no, I don't want it. Now try to sell those pages to everyday Joes like me or you, that for $10,000 a page. So it kind of works nice, but I guess he really liked the pages because it's not like he's trying to keep them off the market. It's just I looked at some of the black and white images of it. Oh, my God, I want some pages from this.
Well, listen, unless you've got that Red Tails money like George Lucas does, I don't think you're going to be buying these pages anytime soon. But again, my question is whether it's the Marvel stuff, whether it's the Dark Horse stuff, like, is this the first, like, why is this now the first time that George Lucas is interested in original art from his properties?
Okay, let me take a stab at this. Maybe it's because this is the first time he's not involved, like, he doesn't own the product anymore. It's probably part of his selling, like, him selling the rights to Disney, that he still gets, like, this was in his contract to sell, where before, because he owned it, it was just like, you probably had, because I know, once again, someone who was doing Star Trek comics for Marvel in Malibu, a good friend of the show, he had, you know, if likenesses had to be, you know, given the green light by people from Paramount and stuff like that. So at Dark Horse, there was probably, because Lucas owned Lucasfilms and all the rights, everything. He had people, when something came across his desk, he just went, go get it. Like, we have the rights to it, and, you know, it's with Dark Horse now. But because he doesn't own it, it seems to be a novelty or something like that, of news, if that makes any sense of what I'm saying.
Well, it does. The only other time that I recall George Lucas discussing wanting to purchase something, all of something, was a quote of his, and I might have the exact verbiage wrong, where he said that if he could, he would go and buy every copy of the Star Wars Christmas special that exists and smash it with a hammer.
But those are all bootlegs, so he'd be giving the pirates money.
I guess.
Great, great thing, though. They really need to put that out on DVD. There's an untapped market right there.
I say they should just embrace it for all its terribleness. Make it canon. Why not?
There's a legendary story that I'm trying to think. Carrie Fisher has a high def copy, because part of getting her to do, like, she always says, she's like, to get me to do, like, commentating on the new DVDs and stuff, one of the deals she made with George is I get one high def copy of the holiday specials that I can show at parties and stuff like that to my friends.
Oh boy.
Which I think is fantastic. Have you ever seen her in that, like, drugged out to the gills?
Allegedly, Tom.
Allegedly drugged out to the gills. It's fantastic.
Right. Let's not cast dispersions on Carrie Fisher's inebriation level, the closet that Harrison Ford's scenes were shot in, the amount of makeup that Mark Hamill was wearing in this. Allegedly, all these things happened allegedly. But yes, I've seen the Star Wars holiday special.
Fantastic.
My only complaint about it should have been longer.
I think there should have been more holiday in it to make it special.
Oh, man. So the last bit of news is Marvel announced, per discussion from San Diego Comic-Con, that people have been commenting or complaining about the paper stock of their comics, noting that DC books are on better paper and that, you know, usually the cover would always be a little bit different of a material.
Thicker.
Whereas Marvel, the cover and the actual pages have been the same. And they did say that come at the end of the summer that they have gone to printers who are, quote, putting together an exclusive paper for Marvel that is thicker and sturdier than what has been used in the past.
Are they going back to Tyvek covers, like, as the gimmick in the day? Do you remember those?
Now, I have those fancy Tyvek wallets, and I like them. Other than the fact that they wear out from going in and out of my slacks all the time.
That's because you're constantly paying for your entourage around you.
That's right. If I just kept a wad of hundreds in my front pocket instead of keeping them all in my wallet and having to take my wallet out. Take out the hundred. Put it back in. My life is a nightmare, Todd.
Rookie mistake.
Get a paper cut on the freshly minted hundreds that I have.
Oh, my God.
So here's my here's my proposal to you, Todd.
Okay.
We need to do something with this. Once it's official that this new paper stock is out, do a blind feel test. If we could tell the difference between the feel of interior pages of, like, a Marvel, like a new Marvel comic, an old Marvel comic, a DC, an Image, you know, whatever.
Oh, bring out old Baxter stock. Do you remember that?
No, what's that?
Baxter stock paper?
I had no Baxter Stockman.
No, there was Baxter paper. You don't remember any of that back in the day?
No. This sounds like one of your lies, Tom.
No, this is one of my truths, truth bombs here.
The one.
We're in the trust tree now, Leonard. I got your back. Back in the day, I think Legion of Superheroes was printed on it. There was an upscale Teen Titans book. Remember when there was two Teen Titan books in the 80s? At all? Do you remember any of it? No.
I do.
Okay, well, one of them was Baxter. And then, like, they would do special reprints of stuff. I'm trying to think, like, they did, like, Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill's Green Lantern, Green Arrow run, and it was all in back. And it was, like, thick, heavy paper. It was, like, it felt like, you know, you're all joking aside, you were talking, like, new money. Like, that kind of feel to it. Like, very sturdy, rigid, like a weird feel when you ran your fingers on it. But Baxter paper was my favorite thing ever. And it was like very white, and it would not yellow ever, suppose, or for like twice as long as paper or whatever. When we're at the shop later, if I can find a Baxter comic, I'm going to show you what I mean.
I'm looking information up here. They say, like, I'm seeing like books like, Camelot 3000.
Yes.
Might have been on it. There was like Kree Skrull War reprints.
That I don't know.
Then like Phoenix the Untold Story was on Baxter paper. And then there was the two types. It was Baxter and Mando paper.
I don't know about the Mando. I'd have to look up. That was Lando's brother, Mando. But
not Eddie's brother,
no.
Mando?
No.
No, that's Mondo. I'm sorry.
Gotcha. But yeah, so there was probably others, but I'm surprised you really didn't know anything about that.
I really didn't. I'm a dum-dum, Todd, but now I'm all about paper.
Oh.
Since we're in the digital age of comics.
That's right.
I'm right on top of paper matters.
Oh, I was going to say something. I'll write that down.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Oh, you're always up to something, Todd. Up to no good, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that covers the news from this past week. There are some conventions going on, a couple smaller conventions. There's a smaller Charlotte, North Carolina convention, a Dover, Delaware convention, the Super Toy Con in Las Vegas. I wonder what that might be sharing a convention center with. And even our friends across the pond in Ireland. There's the Dublin Comic Con that has Kevin Eastman as a featured guest.
Sweet.
Sweet indeed. So, the big conventions happening this weekend is the Tampa Bay Comic Con in Tampa Bay, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Tons and tons of comic creators are going to be there. This is the big comic-y one. Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor are going to be there. George Perez, Peter David, just to name a few. But the two standouts for me
mm-hmm.
were Ian McDiarmid.
Mm-hmm.
Ian McDiarmid was the Emperor from the original Star Wars films.
Now, was he... No, I'm just kidding. I was going to start doing that whole, was he the voice or...
No, he was the actual guy.
That's right.
The Emperor was a guy with makeup on.
That's right. But wasn't there a different one in Empire for a bit? He was just a hologram in Empire?
Right, he was just a hologram. I'm almost certain that it was the same actor.
Okay.
So he, and then I don't usually delve into the cosplayers,
mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot of times like cosplayers get, you know, similar billing if you're a big enough cosplayer with a big enough following.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated that there's a cosplayer out there whose name is Sexy Mario.
Wow.
As in, he's a guy who does Mario of the Super Mario Brothers game.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like a young Captain Lou Albano,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but he dubs himself as Sexy Mario.
Wow. Now, does he dress in a Sexy Mario costume?
It's the normal Mario costume, like the overalls, the mustache, the hat, but no shirt.
Oh, and chaps.
Well, no, chaps. Come on.
Plumber chaps.
Plumber chaps. He should be wearing a tool belt if he was any sort of plumber worth his salt. But
that's right.
His bags, if you will. But alas. The other big convention this weekend is the Dallas Comic Show in Dallas, Texas. John Romita Jr., Doug Monkey is going to be there, one of the few artists that I would have no choice but to get a sketch from. Mm-hmm. Like, with my limited budget and not extravagant spending, I am not a fancy gentleman like some people around here boy. Are. But if I was at a convention and Doug Monkey was there, I'd absolutely have to get something from him. Absolutely, 100%. But all of those pale in comparison, Todd, because what celebrity is appearing at the Dallas Comic Show? I can only hope he's a local, because Judge Reinhold is going to be there.
What? Judge Reinhold?
Yes.
He was in one of those late 80s, early 90s body swapping movies. That's my favorite.
Well, again, he was in Vice Versa, but he did not reach the pinnacles of a career like anyone who is in Back to School.
Oh, yes, no, that's fame. That's your claim to fame right there.
One of the great films that holds up even today.
You know what? Rodney Dangerfield, still one of the greatest comedians of our time.
Absolutely. So those are the conventions. All of that's going to be in the show notes, along with the links to all of this, as well as the links to the soon-to-be-named network, soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. Whenever there is a podcast coming up in the network or anybody from the network is appearing on another show, you will find it here. Links there. I was on Mark Cole's Winter Palace last week. I teased it on last week. We had a long, lengthy discussion regarding Marvel Puzzle Quest, as we always do. Not to take the wind out of the sails of Puzzle Warriors 3, which is our Thursday weekly show about Marvel Puzzle Quest. Fresher and Parlance have seemingly worked out the kinks in their audio issues. Podvocacy was back this past week, continuing and almost wrapping up their Summer of Shame. And Profane Argument also had episodes recently as well. And those are the only shows I'm aware of in the soon-to-be-named network.
All those shows. That's every show in the network, I think.
That's it. Some of the digital sales and freebies. Marvel. IDW still has their Star Trek stuff on sale. DC to go along with the upcoming Suicide Squad film, which I'm sure there will be discussion on next week's episode, as both Todd and I are going to get a chance to see Suicide Squad this weekend.
Separately, though.
Separately, not together. You're probably going to some sort of fancy mid-Thursday evening show.
That's right.
Right, and my wife and I are going to see it like Saturday afternoon and the lowest D possible while our son is sleeping. I offered to him, I said, it shouldn't be too scary and Batman's in it. And he's like, no, I don't want to go. All right.
Easiest answer ever. But at least he doesn't change his mind much, so you don't have to worry about that.
Oh, boy. So the one thing, of course, you know, it's a bunch of things. It's a bunch of like weird like miniseries and ongoings and stuff like that. Early Suicide Squad appearances and other book. But the one thing I must implore you to check out is the first trade of the John Ostrander Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. That trade is in there for $6.
That's a deal.
I think that retailed for $20. I think digitally it's normally like $12 or $13. So, again, half price digitally. It's one of the best comics of all time.
Right. I think it's on that new exclusive digital paper.
Oh, yes. That's called Not Realo.
Oh, wow. You just did a Todd joke.
No, because I don't know who I would be lambasting on this one. I was going to say neither one is funny, but somebody had to take the hit there. Marvel, on the other hand, is having a sale on Jason Aaron written stuff.
Oh, so good stuff.
And I would say, if there's anyone listening here that I may have had a conversation with recently who said, I've never read any Ghost Rider comics, which ones are good? And I said, the Jason Aaron ones. Well, the first trade of his Ghost Rider run is on sale for $4. Mm. His like all of his Thor stuff is there. The first trade of Wolverine and the X-Men is there. The Thanos miniseries is there. It's tons and tons of great stuff. Jason Aaron writes good comic books, and these things are super, super cheap right now. Mm-hmm. So the new freebies, actually, from Marvel. I got so tied up starting the show early. The first issue of New Warriors from the 90s is available for sale. As we mentioned before, the first issue of the 90s Ghost Rider book is for free. I said for sale before but New Warriors for free. The first issue of the Jason Aaron Hulk book is up there for free. And issue 9 of Brian Michael Bendis's Daredevil is up there for free. And I think that's like the first appearance of Echo or something. I'm not sure why like a random issue of Daredevil is in there when it's like, here's a number one, and then here's number 9 of something.
Mm-hmm.
So your guess is as good as mine as to why that one's in there. No, again, you know what? It is the first appearance of Echo as I look closer at it.
If you say so.
I do say so. So there's all that. I mentioned all of those other things. Todd, let's get into what we read from this past week. I did not read Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps number 1, but I know you did.
Yes, I did. And it's basically Hal at this point, he's forged himself a new ring, and he's on the hunt to both restart the Corps and find the old Corps, like to see where they went, because the last that we know of them, they were in the last, you know, before the Big Bang in, what was it, Green Lantern Corps, Edge of Oblivion? Was that the mini?
Edge of Oblivion,
yes.
Correct.
So it's him trying to hunt that down, all the while Sinestro has firmly entrenched himself as the one true Corps, while in the Green Lantern Corps' absence, and he's moved War World, which is his base of operations now, to where destroyed Oa is at the center of the universe. And he has plans for Parallax to make even bigger moves, in that now that he's, you know, running things, it's time to bring fear back to the universe. And we're not sure why, but that's the thing. And while all this is going on, Hal's hunting him down, and maybe we're starting to see glimpses of the Green Lantern Corps coming back.
Well, I would assume that the Green Lantern Corps is coming back, since the title of the book is Hal and the Green Lantern Corps.
Well, I mean the ones from Edge of Oblivion.
Like, oh, the guys that are missing.
The missing guys are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the miniseries, they were shunted, hopefully, to what they thought would be our time or universe. And maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. I don't want to spoil it.
So you've been pushing this book, and I tell you, I really want to get this, but I get so much stuff and I'm so far behind on so many other stuff, and this would just be another thing that either gets put at the bottom of a pile or just delays something mm-hmm. else from getting read, you know?
I totally understand. And I look at it as there's so much good, like Batman and Detective, you know, and Wonder Woman and other stuff. By the way, I'm not really sure. It's like whatever week I read Detective is the best Batman book, and then when I read Batman book, it's the best book. So I'm all up in the air right now. And babbling, but go ahead.
I don't know. I'm trying to trim books, but I a lot of good stuff out there. And once I get involved in things, and I don't know, maybe I'll get the trade. We'll see how that flies.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I am reading, and I know you read from this past week, which was Civil War II, number 4.
Right.
The continuation of what's going on with Carol Danvers and Tony Stark on opposite sides on what to do with Ulysses the Inhuman and his power. So a couple of things that we find out in this, and I guess spoilery, but this is some of these things are spoiled in every other Marvel book, even Marvel books that may have come out like a week before, that in issue 3 was kind of the cliff notes or the highlights of Hawkeye being on trial for killing the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's revealed in this issue that he is found by the judge to be not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was not premeditated by Hawkeye that this is what Bruce Banner wanted to happen. That's why Hawkeye is able to go free from this. And of course, that is further dividing the heroes. Tony goes to Cap and says, the last time this happened, I was on the wrong side of you. I don't want that to happen again. Cap, I mean by Captain America, of course. I guess this is happening before we find out that he's a dirty Hydra Nazi.
But is he a dirty Hydra Nazi?
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
So while this is all going on, Tony, with his super smarts, figures out that the way that Ulysses' power is working is because he experiences this future, he's technically altering the future.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore possibly taking away free will from people. And they're attempting to stop it. You know, there's an issue in this issue where they pick up a woman who's just leaving her job and happens to have an empty briefcase with her because in the vision, she's a Hydra sleeper agent. Mm-hmm. But obviously she doesn't know because either she's not or she's a sleeper agent. And she's so far deep she doesn't realize that that's what she is. Mm-hmm. And Tony's whole thing is like, you can't be grabbing people that might be a threat. I understand what you're trying to do here, but it's turned like it looks like this person may not be a threat, and you just went and harassed this poor woman.
And just basically, she has no rights or anything like that because of it.
Right.
All on this guy's, you know, vision that no one can 100% prove.
So now at the end of this issue is where the big fight is going to begin. The line is officially drawn. It's on the roof of, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D., I guess, where Carol had this woman. Tony goes to save her. He's got his group of heroes. She's got her group of heroes, some of whom are spoiled, who are supposed to be a last page reveal, but are spoiled on most of the covers.
What? Then don't look at most of the covers.
How am I supposed to buy a comic if I don't look at the cover, Todd?
You have a pull list.
It would be as though Marvel publishes two completely different Guardians of the Galaxy books. One in the main canon, one for all ages, and they both come out at the same day, and they're both the same number of issue.
That would be crazy. How would someone keep track of something like that?
Oh my goodness.
With the best of spreadsheets, how could you not have a mistake there?
Oh, even the best of spreadsheets fail.
That's right. No, spreadsheets don't fail. People who read those spreadsheets fail.
Touche. Mm-hmm. It's not so much the spreadsheet, it's the tablet and the other forms of organizing things.
You have too many stickers on it, that's what it is.
So, I'm still enjoying Civil War 2. You know, it's a dumb actioner, it's leading to an end where we know people are going to be off the table, and we know that things are going to be further divided come September, and then come May, none of this is going to make a lick of difference anyway, the way that Marvel does their events.
What?
But it's a fun story for right now.
It's all going to matter. That's why they're debuting this new paper.
Right.
But I'm in it. I'm not as liking it as much as you are, because I'm pretty much all Tony's side, and I'm really disliking Carol from this. I don't know. I look at it as, I don't know. It's real easy to pick one side, and other than some really cool scenes with Jennifer Walters coming out of the coma. And
right,
that is my favorite scene.
Like we previously thought. What? I said not dead like we previously thought or speculated.
No, as you speculated. I said we didn't see a body and they didn't pronounce her dead. So go to the tape if you have to.
Oh, boy.
But she wakes up and he's like, I got to tell you something about Bruce. And he's like, what about Bruce? He's happy. And he's like, that scene was done really well and really cool. And, you know, like now you're like, oh, you may have another angry Hulk on your hands. But otherwise, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I'm just not getting into this whole, you know, inhuman, you know, mix up, crazy Three's Company misunderstanding thing.
See, I'm pretending that the Inhumans have nothing to do with this other than just that one Inhuman.
Well, when Wolverine shows up as the newest Inhuman, that's when I'll care.
That's right. That's when I'll be back on the trolley.
That's right.
That's when I'll read only Inhumans books.
Oh.
You know. All right. Marvel, I hope you're listening.
And they are. They are. Okay.
You want everyone to read your damn Inhuman comics?
Then only print Inhuman comics.
Bam. Problem solved.
That's right. You just got to think outside the box, Marvel.
Every comic. The Inhumans present The Amazing Spider-Man. The Inhumans present Vision. Whatever, you know?
The Inhumans and Squirrel Girl.
Something. Just retitle every book Inhumans something or other.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Like, you know how they used to do those, like, those fifth week events where it'd be like, oh, minus one issues or silent issues or whatever it was? Mm-hmm.
The all-inhuman issue.
Go even further. Not even a fifth week event. For the month of January, everything is Inhuman.
Oh, company-wide.
And then they could put out those press releases. Inhuman sells the most comics in the history of the world.
That's right.
Oh, man.
The inhumanity.
No. At least you didn't say huge manatee.
Why would I say huge manatee? That's just stupid.
Right, there you see. There you go. It's stupid. And Todd would never say something stupid in front of a microphone
that's
being recorded and listened to by dozens of people.
Oh, our throng of fan.
Oh, my goodness. So the last book that we're going to discuss is our preview book, a book that comes out in stores as you're listening to this episode. And that is the new Image book from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, Kill or Be Killed.
Mm-hmm.
This was a book that when it was announced at Image Expo, I saw the title, I saw Ed Brubaker, and then I just stopped reading and added it to my pull list. I did not need to know anything else. I didn't want to know anything else. A new Ed Brubaker book, I'm there.
I was kind of the same way. I was like, boom, Eddie, you got me. You don't have to worry. My money's coming to you.
So I guess the pitch for this is it starts off as, you know, a young man in his, I would guess, you know, mid to late 20s, maybe late 20s, I think, early 30s.
Sure, the way they
I'm remembering from the story itself.
Right, the way they explain his past in college, I think it's late 20s.
Right, it starts off of him killing a bunch of dudes and then him explaining how he got to this point in his life of being a cloaked vigilante. It's not a superhero book, but I will say this. I was surprised that there were supernatural elements in this book, or is there?
That is the best way to say that, because I was thinking right. The exact same thing.
So, this kid falls on hard times. He's a 28-year-old college student. He's living with a friend who's younger than him, who is dating a girl that he had a crush on.
Mm-hmm.
She's leading him along. His life is not going very well. He decides he's going to kill himself. And then by the grace of God, he is saved.
Mm-hmm.
But then a deal is struck that for him to be saved, once a month, he needs to kill someone.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes from there. I like this a lot,
mm-hmm.
especially because of the mystery of whether or not the supernatural element is real or not.
I like it too. It's very weird to see because my least favorite of Ed Brubaker's stuff that I've read of is like, you know, creator-owned stuff. It was Fatale, and that had the most magic in it, like mystical stuff.
Sure.
And I'm not knocking it. It's not saying I don't like it. It's just out of everything else. I like his straight criminal stuff. And not, you know, all joking aside that he had a comic called Criminal. But I like, you know, the realism of it, like that. And what was the one that was just the last one, with the writers in L.A. during the
fade out.
Like, I really like that one. So I'm curious to see on this one too, because it's always weird to me to see, you know, weird mystic stuff in his books, but it's a question of, is it there? And I'm completely fascinated, and you know, him and Sean Phillips work very, very well together. So I love the art on it. And, I'm looking forward to more Kill or Be Killed. And that whole thing with him and his roommate and the girlfriend, I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, Eddie, you're killing me. So good.
Yes. This goes to show, and I typically don't do this, and I think a lot of this helps. I think a lot of this helps non-Big Two comics. Marvel, a little bit more of a, what's the word I'm looking for? A someone who does this more often than not, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Where books get spoiled, not so much in the solicit text, but even before the solicits come out.
Right.
You know, we jokingly said that in regards to Civil War, we more or less know how Civil War is going to end. You know, we knew how it was going to end a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the teased stuff that came out regarding Marvel Next Now or whatever.
Right, like who's wearing the Iron Man helmet and blah, blah, blah.
Right, so all of that stuff kind of got teased off to us already, whereas it behooves you, me, as a person, and you, I think, as a listener, that the more you avoid about a book coming out, especially if it's a creator that you like,
mm-hmm.
The less you read and the less you know about it, the better off you are.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
Right.
Unless you're one of those people who needs to know everything, Leonard, all the time.
I need to know everything all the time, too, but not to this extent.
No, I know. I'm joking around.
Even I have my limits.
I barely want to know anything most of the time, so I keep my head down and my mouth shut with this, and I agree with you.
I tell you, Todd loves not to know.
Oh, if I could only not go back in time and not know a lot more things, I'd be golden, Leonard.
Nothing makes Todd more happy than not knowing the answer to your question.
Mm-hmm. Am I supposed to know what that means?
Someone might, not you. You might want to write that one down later.
Okay.
I'm only having fun. So, that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're most looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Standard Time or so in the evening, you will see the poll post, which is a link to all of the comics that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you get them mailed to your home, however you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out, and hey, I streamlined this site a little bit, so if you need to look at all the past poll posts, there's just one handy-dandy link, and it'll pull them all up.
Wow. You're like technical guy.
That's right. I'm a regular...
MacGyver.
Right. I did it all with my penknife.
That's right, and your non-fake rubbery mask.
So Todd and I both attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. I eked ahead in the lead last week with 20 correct guesses. Todd has 19. So, obviously, if I was to guess under normal circumstances, Kill or Be Killed probably would have been both of our most looking forward book to this week.
Yes, but we're taking that off the list, right?
Taking it off the table.
That's right. That's kind of why I was like, No, but anyway, go ahead.
So looking at your list of stuff that's coming out, I am going to guess the thing that you are most looking forward to coming out with Kill or Be Killed off the table.
Mm-hmm.
I'm between two books. And I'm going to say... Batman number 4.
It is not Batman number 4. What is your second book?
Second book was Walking Dead 157.
And you are completely off the rails again.
Okay.
Do you have any idea what it is now?
Nope. Just tell me what it is.
It is Suicide Squad Rebirth number 1. I'm a big Squad fan. I've followed every iteration of the Squad since the 80s one, and I just love the idea of, you know, taking the crooks and make them do jobs for you know, time off their sentences and stuff like that. And some have been great and some have been not so great, but I always love that concept.
Because the Suicide Squad film is in such the zeitgeist of popular culture right now, I had to explain the premise of Suicide Squad, not the movie, but the comic book, to multiple normal people over the last 7 days.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Do you just have, like, a laminated card you hand out now?
I should.
Here you go. Leonard, Suicide, here you go.
It's on the other side of my laminated card that says, I'm a deaf mute.
Oh, here, let me move all those hundreds I'm always grabbing out of my Tyvek wallet and get my Suicide Squad laminated card. Hello, ladies.
Now, see, I get that one. Oh, boy. So how about you? Look at my list.
Sorry. I'm too busy vamping here in my head.
Come on, get you back on track. That's my job.
That's right. I'm looking at your list, and I have no idea, so I'm hoping to gain ground here. Is it an all-new Harley Quinn number 1?
It is not.
Oh, okay. But it's not Kill or Be Killed, so.
It's not, right. No second guesses for you. It is Walking Dead 157.
I should have known when you said that was one of mine. I should have looked into your brain.
My mind grapes.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yes, after the events of the last issue, I can't wait to see where things go from here. Mm-hmm. You talk about shaking up the status quo. That's what happened at the end of last issue. And I haven't had that sort of feeling from a Walking Dead comic in, I don't know, maybe like a year.
Ah.
Like, it's always been good, but, like, what was it, a year ago where where Alpha snuck into the little town and killed, like, 8 people and put their heads on pikes outside the town and said, this is your limit, don't cross this line.
And you're lowballing that number, I think.
Right, but you get what I'm saying, right? So, like, that was one of those, like, oh boy, you know, the game has been changed. Well, the end of 156 changed the game as well. So I'm interested to see what happens next.
And it is all about the game and how you play it.
Time to play the game, Todd?
It always is time to play the game.
So the last bit of business before we get into TV talk, of course, is our weekly question for 2016. It is the best blank. We're taking a character, a concept, a team, a something involving comics, and we are asking you, the listeners, to choose or discuss or talk about the best of those. You know, we had people mention the Man Without Fear miniseries from Frank Miller and John Romita Jr., which was actually the very first time that I read Daredevil comics. I think I got like a trade of that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember those had like foil variant covers or some sort of garbage like that.
Or you mean good stuff.
Right. Well, you know, I say garbage as good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good, but it didn't really like grab me like I think other stuff I was reading at the time. People mentioned the current No Secret Identity Living in San Francisco stuff. And a friend of the show, the aforementioned Mark Cole, he had mentioned the Carl Kessel, Kerry Nord Daredevil of the mid to late 90s, like 96, 97 era.
Is that when he was his own twin brother?
No.
Okay.
When he was his own twin brother was like in the 60s.
Oh, I thought that was later. I don't know why I'm confused.
They may have revisited it, mm-hmm. like as a gag or two, but that, you know, the Kessel Nord was during Heroes Reborn, or Heroes Burn, when like all the big guns were off the table. And I think I discussed it a little bit during the Black Widow best blank, where she was like the only Avenger left, and her is like, she's like, I'm gonna go around and I'm gonna kill all the other villains that are left because it's my fault that the Avengers are dead, because everyone thought the Avengers and the Fantastic Four were dead.
I remember.
So Todd, how's by you, a man who is as big as an aficionado of Daredevil as you are of Doctor Who?
Listen, I was around from the beginning. The Mark Waid run, baby. That's the one true Daredevil. I mean, really, we have that one, the Charles Soule one, and that's about it, right? Those are the... You have the TV show to go from, and those are your three choices, so I'm going...
Do you count the Ben Affleck movie?
Ben who?
Right.
But I don't know how that happened. That's a wibbly wobbly timey wimey thing. But so I, you know, from the ground floor, Mark Waid's Daredevil is the one best, you know, Daredevil ever.
This is tough for me.
I knew it would be tough for you.
Because I love so much about Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
No joke. I mentioned it in the little post. Outside of Spider-Man, he is probably my second favorite superhero.
That's right. That's why you watched all the Netflix episodes.
It's my shame. It's my public shame to go along with my 19 other secret shames that no one will know.
That's right. You have to wear the Scarlet DD.
So I love that Carl Kessel, Kerry Nord run.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly one of the greatest runs of a comic of all time.
Mm-hmm.
People decry the 90s comics, but during that time, like that, the Carl Kessel Daredevil was out. The Kurt Busiek Thunderbolts was out. There was so much good stuff that was out from comics during that era, but everyone, you know, easily just focuses on the garbage, the crap. It's easier to do that.
Right.
But I love that Mark Waid run.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Mark Waid run does falter at some points, a little bit toward the end. There's some story arcs that aren't as strong as others. But if you were to ask me, I need to pick one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Desert Island, whatever it is. I gotta go with the Mark Waid run. Only because it's longer. There's more issues of it.
Well, that's an interesting take.
If the Kessel Nord run, and I don't even think Kerry Nord was the artist on as many issues as Carl Kessel wrote, but that is such a great run. I wish it was longer, but I'm kind of glad that it's not, because I think if it went on longer, it might have started to lose a little bit of its steam or came to an abrupt end, not getting to tell the story that he wanted to tell, because I think like Joe Kelly came after that, and his run was good, not great. And then they did like a mini series in between the end of that and the beginning of the Kevin Smith run, where they did like a 4-issue mini. Like, it was what if Matt Murdock was never Daredevil, but he was like an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
And that stunk out loud.
What? Can you imagine if like somebody great like Ed Brubaker did a Daredevil run or something?
And that's the thing. We're talking about the Kevin Smith run. Again, a lot of people decry it because whatever their personal feelings about Kevin Smith are, it's really good. And that arguably turned the tide for Marvel, much like in a similar way that Ultimate Spider-Man would do a few years later. Mm-hmm. Like, Ultimate Spider-Man and that sort of thing never would have happened if Kevin Smith's Daredevil wasn't the success that it was.
And they didn't have John Byrne's Spider-Man Year One.
Right.
I honestly say that's a whole nother show that we could do. But if it wasn't for that tanking, a lot of this stuff would have never happened.
So there's the Kevin Smith run. There's the Brian Michael Bendis run. There's the Ed Brubaker run. There's the Andy Diggle run. All these great runs on Daredevil. And to pick one, you know, I just had to do it. It's the Mark Waid run. Just because it's so good for so many issues, and it got you to read Daredevil.
That's right. That's right. And I still stand by when Daredevil is fighting, I forget the name of the character, who is basically his Bizarro or Reverse Flash, has all the powers, you know what I mean?
I think it's like Ronin or something.
Right. No, this is, I think it was like with a K or something like that. But either way, they're fighting, and they're fighting in the sporting goods store. And Daredevil is like, well, I've disoriented him. He's just got my powers and all this stuff, and he can't see. So he's got to become accustomed to all these senses. And if I turn on the sprinklers, rain really messed me up when I first got it. And he's like, oh, now while he's disoriented, I'll grab a baseball bat out of this thing and beat him senseless. And the guy turns to him and just goes, you know what? While you're doing that, why don't you grab the red one? And Daredevil's like, holy crap. He can see, like, he's got everything I have and one more, and he just gets what, like, that. I got goosebumps right now from that. That is like one of those like Wade moments where you're like, everything changes right here. And I'll always remember that as one of my favorite moments in Daredevil history and comic book history itself.
So that was one of the, I don't know if you read, Wade interviews about that.
Mm-hmm.
He said that was one where he came up with that line,
mm-hmm,
and kind of built that issue around that line.
That's right. And I even asked him about it when we interviewed him. I told him that was my favorite thing.
So yes, the Mark Wade Daredevil run is fantastic.
That's right.
Go out of your way to get it.
Do we have somebody that we could talk about next week, Leonard?
We do, Todd. Kind of in the next chamber, it's DC stuff, and a little bit off-kilter of a character, not so much as a superhero per se, but a long-lasting, well-known character.
Supporting character.
Right, and that would be Best Alfred.
Doesn't get the love he deserves, Alfred.
No, Alfred Pennyworth, a loyal butler, manservant, call him what you will, of the Batman, and his assorted sundry of cronies that he's got hanging around. But Alfred Pennyworth, what is the best version, iteration, or otherwise of him?
That's right. While he's shining the silver, he could be sharpening the batarangs. It's like he could do it all.
And that's what makes him great.
Mm-hmm.
But which version of him is the best?
I'll have to think about that one.
We'll certainly find out next week when we talk about it then.
Yay!
So be sure to follow the show on Twitter at Longbox Heroes. Be sure to follow Todd on Twitter at Roker the Joker, R-O-W-K-E-R the Joker. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at LF Chikarison. This weekend, I will be in Philly for the Chikara Hour of Power, kind of a live streaming, old school studio TV version of Chikara. The last one had a big matchup between Fire Ant and Frightmare. Who knows what this is going to have in store? And if you are a Chikaratopia subscriber or have never ventured into Chikaratopia, good for you, because the first week is free. That will be streaming live from the Wrestle Factory this Sunday at 4:00. And I will be there, and I will be wearing my flip-flops.
Oh, three of my favorite things, your flip-flops, my new favorite thing, Frightmare, is one of the greatest names I've ever heard in my entire life, and the Wrestling Factory, where they manufacture wrestles.
They do manufacture wrestles there.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we mentioned the other shows. What else do we have before TV talk? Am I forgetting
I think
something?
We even had an Art Attack. I think we had an Adam Kubert sketch.
Get out of town.
This week. Because, like, you know, Janelle, I'm looking right now.
My computer's quicker than yours.
No, it's not.
Yes. An Adam Kubert sketch of Havoc.
Mm-hmm. By Jesse DeJong. I'm hoping I'm saying that right.
Jesse DeJong, yes. Mm-hmm. And he got that back in 2004. And that looks as cool as all get out.
That's right. And Adam Kubert even liked it.
Oh, boy.
So that's like, I'm getting the Kubert rub on my...
Jesse is a good Twitterer, being that he knows how to tag the right ways and all that sort of jazz.
I'm going to go to Twitter school so I can do that. Because if I tag some wrestlers in my really funny tweets, I think I would get some retweets.
I have a new class coming up in my Twitter class. It's how to subtweet when you're over 40.
Oh, boy. Could I be a tenured professor at that school?
Hmm. I think you can come and do a few guest lectures, I'm sure.
Oh, goodness.
So I think that covers everything in that regard. So if you are not a TV listener, carer, whatever, we bid you adieu. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you all here next week. Mm-hmm. And let's get into TV talk, starting with Outcast.
Mm-hmm.
So, I love Outcast. I think it's a really good show. The two main stories in this, one is Reverend Anderson going more and more crazy, more quote-unquote delusional regarding all of this. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, and possibly my favorite part of the show to date,
mm-hmm.
if you were to just take these parts of this show out, I think this might have been my favorite moments of the show so far. The revelation of the demons or whatever they are and their connection specifically to Sydney.
Yes.
And Sydney's life before.
And to a lesser extent, the fire guy's wife.
Right. So in this episode, we get the big revelation that these demons are, or whatever they are, the things that are possessing the other people.
Because I'm starting to think they're not demons, but go ahead.
Okay. Whatever they are. Entities, something.
Aliens.
Are bonding with humans, and they need time to, I guess, become two with the person that they're taking over.
To acclimate what's happening or something.
Right. You know, as Todd mentioned, I think, what's the fire chief
and his wife,
right? So his wife is possessed,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't want anyone to know because it's given her like a new lease on life.
He loves this version better.
Right. And he doesn't want anything to change with that, because she's experiencing all these things for the first time in a new way, and he's enjoying being with this version of her. Whereas Sydney, on the other hand, may have been a bigger monster before.
I don't think there's... Well, sorry I did that. I was like, because after he did to Kyle's neighbor, it's close, but was that not the entity and more Sydney? Do you know what I'm trying to say? Because they're
right.
both in there.
And it seems as though the entity that's inside Sydney is fighting to make him good.
Yes.
And that is so fascinating to me. And that is such a departure from the comic, but a welcome departure from the comic. Because I'm sure that may be a revelation we would have gotten to eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have the same affinity for this comic as I do for others.
Right. You don't aren't beholding to the said story in an almost, you know, crazy way. But with Outcast, I do like it because they're kind of answering the question, is it, or asking the question, is it, you know, these things that might be bad, and we're only finding out that they may be bad because it takes a while to get used to it, and they're just crazy for that short time, because the fireman has the cabin or the little trailer, and he locks the new ones in there until they can figure their stuff out, and then they're kind of okay. And it seems like they really haven't done anything terrible. We're finding out that a lot of them don't do anything terrible after the initial getting used to it phase. Even the crazy old lady, she may have been mean to people, but other than like the exorcism time with the Reverend, they don't do anything bad. So with Sydney, it's yes, this guy before me was, you're all thinking we're demons, but the guy before me was worse. And what do you do? And when he's got Sydney and he's like, you let me out, and if it goes wrong, you got a bigger monster on your head. And I'm like, wow, well, there's all kinds of questions I have now and what's going on. And I'm loving this show more and more.
And what do we got, like 2 episodes left? Maybe 3 episodes
something
left?
Something like that. And I love the fact that we're starting to seesaw Reverend Anderson and Kyle. Like in the beginning, Kyle made all the terrible decisions, and Reverend Anderson was the rock who was like, no, you can't do that. And we have completely flipped the script. Like Anderson has gone so far off the rails, it's ridiculous. In a good
right.
way. In a good way.
Good storytelling, character arcs that have a beginning and a middle and end. It's a well-crafted TV show.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of well-crafted TV shows, should we talk about Preacher?
I think we need to talk about Preacher. Todd, I'm going to let you take the reins on this one to start.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, boy. I am completely worried about what you have to say.
Oh, you have to start off, though, with the poll, the results of the poll of the gripe bombs.
Okay, let me grab that right now as we get into the season finale. I had written, how many gripe bombs, TM, will Leonard F. Chakarson drop discussing Preacher's finale on this week's Long Box Heroes? 0 gripe bombs, 1 to 5 gripe bombs, 6 to 10 gripe bombs, or all the gripe bombs? With 16 votes, I think my biggest poll ever, 0 gripe bombs got 6%. 1 to 5 gripe bombs got 25%. 6 to 10 gripe bombs, 0%. All the gripe bombs, 69%. That's right.
All right. So, go ahead, Todd, start it off for the shit for the episode.
Okay. The episode starts off with Jesse, a radio announcer, talking about how God is coming to Anvil. And then we get a countdown clock to how long it is, which I love the countdown clock. And we find out that Jesse is still on the run, with one of my favorite scenes in the whole show right now, is him just running past the old lady yelling, "Hey, Mabel." I burst out laughing. I'm like, that's hysterical. I know Leonard's going to love that. So great moment. And then we go into it that Sheriff Root has captured the reason Jesse's on the run is because Sheriff Root has captured Cassidy when he found out that they were hiding somewhere, and he's got him in jail, and he's going to have a discussion with him, and he may or may not know that he's a vampire, and he has questions about Arsface and other things. And then Tulip wants to find Jesse and where he's at, because she wants to wrap up the Carlos storyline. And while all this is going on, then we get to the church where Jesse's going to call up God and show everybody really that there's a God. And I kind of want to stop there, because then like the show, you know, kind of goes into its own thing. But I really enjoyed it. Everything. I only had one small problem with the episode.
How dare you?
One small problem that I thought was bad writing was that Donnie, when Jesse ends up getting helped by Donnie just because he was merciful to him in the bathroom stall, I feel like the writers wrote themselves into a corner and went, oh, well, we got to hide him someplace. We got to get him at Donnie's house. And it was kind of off the, like, you know, the hand of God, with where it was like, oh, well, we had to burn Cassidy and then get him with Tulip. It was like, well, we'll just explain it real quick. And to me, that doesn't make any sense. But the Cassidy and Root in the prison was fantastic. I like the I actually like the Carlo stuff, because as we get more what Jesse and Tulip should be like together with their banter, and Jesse and Tulip in the bank were fun. And when God shows up, I couldn't stop. The God thing was one of my favorite things. I think this feels like a Preacher comic now, and then the way it wraps up, it's almost like this whole show. Do you remember that comic Before Watchmen, Leonard?
Uh-huh.
We're watching Before Preacher right now, with some changes.
So, where to begin?
Oh, boy. Gripe bomb number one.
Okay. So, you mentioned about them with the lazy writing with Donnie,
right,
and how they got around that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I disagree with that, the fact of Jason and David brought it up on Podvocacy,
mm-hmm,
that while normally we see Jesse use the word on people, mm-hmm, they speculated that he possibly used the word on them.
I don't think so on that.
Okay, don't think so either, but at least that's something for me to hang my proverbial hat on in that regard.
Fair enough.
Okay. However, you could just lazily write your way out of every plot hole by blowing up the entire town at the end of the episode and not having to wrap up any plot holes whatsoever, just kill everyone. That's what I would do if I was a lazy writer.
But,
oh, wait, that's what they did.
Just like Garth Ennis did, gotcha.
But Garth Ennis didn't spend 10 episodes of a TV show giving you all these interpersonal relationships. He just wiped everyone out in the first 10 pages of the comic.
Right.
Okay. That said, outside of a few gripes, I actually enjoyed this episode.
Wow, how many gripes officially would you say?
Okay, well, there was one. Mm-hmm. Well, you're supposed to be keeping count. This is your gimmick, brother.
Well, you said gripe. You didn't, whatever.
Okay.
So there's one.
I felt the addition of, and again, you could correct me if I'm wrong in this. I don't think that at any point in the Preacher comic book Tulip and Jesse relationship, was Tulip pregnant?
Nope.
Or had a miscarriage?
Nope.
Okay. That is the definition of lazy writing. Here is a way for us to get you to hate a character or to feel sympathy for a character, make them pregnant, and make them have a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
Lazy writing did not need to happen. He could have very simply just, like, turned his back on them.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need to add that extra bit on there. Added nothing. Lazy writing.
I actually think that that's going to come into play down the line, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
Even more, which I don't want to, between me and you, this is like spoilers. Stuff happens to Tulip in the comic that is big, and I think that would be an offer to Tulip. But anyway, go ahead.
Sure. Right. Okay. And we'll, you know, again, that's something we would cross our bridge when we come
right
to. I jokingly say that they just wrote out all the plot holes by blowing up the entire town, but I will say this, I did start to come around a bit with Emily's decision from last week, where she decides to kill the mayor,
mm-hmm,
because at the end of the episode, the entire town finds out that God is not there.
Right.
Not that he's gone, not that he doesn't exist, but he's essentially not watching over them.
Right.
So they all just kind of give in to their worst base impulses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps Emily, seeing everything going on around her, may not have had the definitive proof that everyone got in the church, but may have had that feeling before everyone else.
Right. In the same way that when you were griping about why the word didn't work on King Cannon, it was, he said, serve God, but his God wasn't the Christian God. It was the God of meat, which technically, you know, works in the thematic, you know, follow through. So it's like, I know what you're saying.
I could also gripe a little bit about how Donnie's wife knew how to work the Jesus phone.
How are you going to gripe about that? Like, to me, it was like, she was just looking at it like Jesse, who doesn't have FaceTime or a cell phone or anything like that.
But this thing was not FaceTime or a cell phone. This was a box with, like, a bunch of weird dials and little things that opened and little, like, circles and stuff on it. It wasn't anything that anyone on Earth would have ever seen before.
Oh, I agree, but we, even both of us looking at it, could agree that we knew right where the hand went. We could say that.
Okay.
Right, so that's not a problem. But
right, everything else that she was able to figure out from it and knew the names of it, like, they... Like, she just knew that information because she had to know that information to move the plot along to the next scene.
I kind of disagree.
Okay.
That it was more like, she's like, oh, well, this thing looks like a, like a, like, she didn't know. She didn't know. She was just.
But she used a couple, like, technical names for
she
things.
She was BSing her way through the thing.
Okay.
And it, and then, honestly, Jesse just tinkers with it and gets it to work accidentally. That's the way I look at those scenes.
That said, the scene where he shows God to the entire church was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of a couple little, like, cutesy callbacks of, like, the guy's like, oh, can I get my penis put back on? Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. This was one of those scenes where, like, I felt as though I'm reading the comic book mm-hmm. again. Like, this was one of those few scenes of the entire 10 episodes that felt like the comic.
Right.
And you and I, having read the comics, before he even called God, we knew what this was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't change the way I felt about it, because it was very well done. Listening to Podvocacy, listening to Jason and David go on about it, them not knowing,
mm-hmm.
I was a little bit jealous that I had that spoiled on me for myself.
Yeah, but you got it spoiled in the book, so it's okay.
I got it spoiled for me in the best possible way possible. Mm-hmm. Reading the good version of what we're watching.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, we get the revelation of what that crazy dial thing at the bottom was, and it was the vents for, you know, whatever the methane gas
the place was run by methane gas from the cow poop.
Right. So, the whole town blows up. Jesse Tulip and Cassidy are off somewhere else getting Tulip her french fries. I'm not sure if they're even aware or care if the town is blown up, and it really doesn't matter at this point.
Mm-hmm. My opinion is they don't know.
Okay. Right. Okay, well, again, it doesn't matter if they know or don't know, because it doesn't matter, because they're never going back there again.
Right.
It's done, and so the Santa Killer shows up, still just known as the Cowboy, and they do a good job of putting him over.
Mm-hmm.
And what he can do and how powerful he is, because he kills the unkillable angel.
But see, that was something someone who I know who didn't read the comics was not 100% sure on. And I was like, yeah, it kind of works that way because, you know, like the angels have explained, when we're killed, we come back within a few seconds or like a minute or so.
Mm-hmm.
But
well. Okay, so the reason I say that is because in the previous episode when he shoots DeBlanc,
it's 17 hours later and he still hasn't come back.
And this episode, Fiore is the only one who comes back.
All dirty and looking disheveled.
And sad.
And I think that has to do from the loss of his buddy, plus shock of, I don't think it was just a walk out of hell. You know what I mean. So I think there's a whole story, and I know you were worried that in 56 minutes or whatever, we weren't going to get enough. I think it covers
55:32 to be exact.
I knew you'd look, and I love it. but I think they answered all the questions that we wanted, and with the Cowboy, I think that was a great way to end it and be that his story's a part of season two. Like, we don't.
Well, you know, you do make a great point. I do like the way that they did kind of mention and wrap up all the stuff from season one, mm-hmm. like the Hair Star stuff that they teased and the TC and Jody stuff that they wrapped up in this episode as well. Oh, wait, they didn't even mention those things at all.
Which I'm fine with. I'm completely. That's a season two thing. It's fine.
The TC and Jody stuff I'll give you
mm-hmm.
because it's something that takes place in a flashback. It's something that we hear names. It's regarding Jesse's father, and it'll all tie back in when Jesse's father comes back up. if you go back and watch the scene of the introduction to Hare Star, it is the ultimate non sequitur with zero payoff.
I'll give you that, but I'll tell you, if you didn't read the comic, you mm-hmm. wouldn't have cared. You wouldn't even remember that scene. Nobody I know watched then, this season and said, oh, like, who was that guy? They were all worried. That season finale, like, blew them away. And that's something that when you watch season two or he shows up, it's like, oh, well, he was watching all of this right from the beginning. And
but it, by your own accord, when he shows up in season two, no one will remember him unless they read the comic from season one, because nobody who read the comic, people who haven't read the comic who watched season one, haven't even mentioned that scene. And what you're saying is, if people haven't read the comic, why put in a random scene of a guy that means nothing except to people who read the comic books if you're not going to give some sort of acknowledgement or payoff or something to it other than just to put it in there just because we're putting it in there?
I think, like I said, story-wise, it makes sense to me in that it's like, we
story-wise, it makes sense to you to show a scene that has nothing to do with anything to introduce a character who we're not even introduced to. We only see him put on his hat and leave the scene. It makes sense to you that maybe next season when he comes back, no one who remembers it will remember it.
That's why they have those. I know you don't see them because you fast forward through them. But they're like,
next week on Preacher?
Previously on Preacher.
I do watch the previouslys on.
The previously on Preachers. That'll show up. And like I said, it's going to be important that that group, that me and you know who they are wise to what's going on as early as it is.
Okay.
And I really think it's one of those things, again, that you're, you know, in your heart, Preacher's right there next to Genesis, beaten away, and it bothers you, where to me it's like, yeah, okay, it's throwaway. It's going to come back later. But I don't think anybody's clamoring or worried that they don't have the answer. I'm like, because so many other big things happened.
I could name at least one person who's worried about it.
I know my one friend Joe hated it, but anybody else?
He was the guy I was thinking of.
Oh, okay.
So where I'm going with that is, and again, it's a scene that, you know, that's a throwaway, it means nothing, you know, whatever it is. My whole thing is like, if you're not even going to acknowledge it, why bother putting it in there? But whatever. Mm-hmm. So the only last two bits, and you say about, you know, how near and dear the book is to my heart. I was not as, maybe it's because I've seen so much in my days. Mm-hmm. I've watched your Martyrs, I've watched your Antichrists, I've watched your Cannibal Holocausts, Todd, I've seen them all.
Oh, these are movies?
These are films.
Okay, I didn't know any of those. I thought you were just saying words.
Maybe it's because I have no soul.
Mm-hmm.
But I was not as shocked or aghast or whatever word you want to use with the meat baby
mm-hmm.
as everyone else apparently is.
I was immune to the meat baby, but go ahead.
Okay. Because I know what it really was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, nah, this is if what we got was a 10,
mm-hmm.
this is like a 1.
Well, I watched Talking Preacher after it.
I'm sorry.
Well, it was kind of actually interesting. And they mentioned, they're like, we went for a more emotional tug with like his missing child and his god of meat, and he makes the meat baby. He goes, because what was in the comic, they just told us we couldn't do. And I kind of believe it. Do you know what I mean?
Didn't you, on a previous episode of this show, mm-hmm. say, this is AMC, they'll be able to do whatever they want?
Close to whatever they want. Check the tape. Somebody check okay. the tape.
I'll have to check the gate and check the tape on that mm-hmm. one. I think it might have been full of malarkey then and full of Bologna now.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this, all in all, this was a pleasing episode.
Mm.
I am a little sad that they did waste 10 episodes to tell the first issue of Preacher and ruin some other future storylines that they won't be able to tell now.
Right. Okay. I'm not even going to get into that. But a couple of things I do want to touch on.
Go ahead.
Cassidy and Root in the jail, I thought was okay. such a fun scene.
Yeah.
where, like, and it, like, good direction in the implication. Like, when we cut away, we come back, and he's drinking the blood, and he pulls the slug out of his stomach, and he throws it to the pile of slugs across the floor. And you're like, oh, time has passed, and there has been some fun here. And him, like, getting into Root's head and everything going on. That's one thing I want to talk about. The scene with Carlos when they decide to let him go. And once again, Johnny Cash starts playing, and he gives Tulip gives him the tire iron. And Jesse's like, oh, you don't think that's fair? And she's like, no. Nah. He's like, I'll give him the gun. Carlos is like, I don't want the gun. I know what's going to happen if you're going to give me the gun. And Jesse walks over, and it's one of my favorite scenes in the whole season, is he hands him the gun with the gun face towards himself. And the guy's like, I don't want the gun. He spins it around, cocks it, puts it to his head. He's like, all right, give me the gun. And he flips it, and he just had, like, his face goes from, all right, here, take this. I will kill you. All right, here, take this. And he goes back, and they're like, let's do this. And I'm like, this to me is Preacher all the way. And then all the deaths during the Blind Melon song, when everybody has gone completely crazy because they believe nothing's worth, they can do anything because God's off the throne. And the little girls castrate the pedophile. I don't know if you yep. noticed that.
Come on now.
No, there's a couple of people who missed that. The smothering of Arseface's friend from the suicide, and the kid taking the selfie. And then as we find out that the two mascots who hated each other were in a secret gay relationship. I was like, this is fantastic.
Well, we got that from when the one was in the cell with Cassidy.
No, we got, all he said was a name, and then Cassidy goes, well, maybe you should stay away from the Brokeback Mountain thing until you both get your heads together. And then we start to see the glances in church, and then they ended up in the hanging tree, which, once again, we have an Indian hanging from that tree from the Saint of Killers storyline. And I'm like, to me, I honestly thought I liked it so much more than you. I thought it was brilliant at times, like the weird things that they do. And I don't know. I loved the episode. I thought it was fantastic.
You have been more on board with this than I have been since the beginning.
I know. I'm just explaining how much I love it.
Obviously, it's going to take a little bit more convincing for me to think something is fantastic or epic or breathtaking. Mm-hmm. I was already out on the Carlos stuff. Like, it was fun, whatever. You know, they beat the snot out of him. But once they did the ploy with, like, oh, it's because he let that guy go because he was jealous of their relationship, and somehow that caused Tulip to have a miscarriage, I'm just like, okay, this guy's going to get what's coming to him. It doesn't matter to me. This is like the D story
in this episode.
At least
he's guaranteed to be dead, right?
Right, no. But everyone's guaranteed to be dead because they just blew up the town and they're going to start over.
See, I beg to differ on that. The only one that we know is dead for, like, that's seen a body is Donnie's wife in the red shoes.
Which
is fantastic because when Saint of Killers shoots that female angel, you could see the two legs and the ruby slippers sticking out of the
right.
thing. But I'm just saying someone could have been behind a concrete thing. The meat man might be alive because he was in the factory, like, you know, that was concrete. Like, or God could have saved one as a whole thing. Like, you're my guy to go up against Preacher. Like, story wise, stuff can still happen, but for most part, the town's dead.
The implication, Todd, that we are being led to believe is that everyone is dead.
Right. Couldn't throw us a swerve down the line, though.
With our no previous knowledge of the good version of what we just watched.
Right. Right.
But again, it was not a terrible show, and I think I had a conversation with someone on Twitter about this on Sunday. The comic is arguably a 10.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue that it's maybe one of the best comics of all time.
Which we should do something about. We should discuss this at some
point. We could discuss it.
I mean, not right now, because, you know, we're running long, but you know what I'm saying.
Right. But, and the show is, at its best, a 5, and at its worst, a 3.5. So is it terrible? Is it an abomination? Is it a thing that I hate the most? No. But when it hits, it hits. The stuff that, like, works is super strong. Like, the Santa Killer stuff. The scene with God. You know,
mm-hmm.
that sort of stuff. You know, how you mentioned, like, the scene at the end where everyone's just, like, they don't care anymore and they're just, like, doing whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Set to the music. And I think a lot of it, you know, we've discussed this, I think, in the
soundtrack.
Past.
Oh, my God.
Right, the soundtrack adds so much to those scenes, whereas everyone likes that Suicide Squad trailer, and I'm a victim of this, too. I like that Suicide Squad trailer that has Bohemian Rhapsody in it.
When Emily starts playing 96 Tears, when they riot in the church, I'm like, everything, this blood, sweat, and tears, when they're fixing the church, I'm like, this soundtrack's fantastic. Fantastic. But really quick, you're talking about it's a 3 at this and it's this at the best. You want to know mine? Started off at a 5 at its weakest. 7s, you know, most of the time. 8s, like here, like 8s with the scene with the Saint of Killers and stuff like that. And I have to give it a solid 9 or higher on this final episode for me.
I give the final episode probably like a 7 pushing an 8.
I give it a 9, not a low to mid 9.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me.
Right, you come in with this with a preconceived notion that this show was good from the beginning.
Oh, it was fantastic from the beginning.
A 5 is fantastic.
My life is mostly filled with 5s, Leonard. So.
All right, fair enough.
But anyway, have we talked a lot about Preacher?
I think we have.
How long was this show?
I think people will be happy that we're not talking about Preacher anymore, and then we'll be right back into the thick of things with... Outcast next week, and this has been a long episode, but whatever, man.
We'll have some
it is what it is, and this is what the show is now, right. So enjoy, everybody.
But we have a little bit, we'll probably have Squad talk next week, too.
Right, we'll have Suicide Squad to talk about next week as well, as Outcast, and then, you know, whenever the new shows start coming back, I think it's probably, like, not until, like, late September, early October, so short shows are coming, folks, I promise.
That's right, and we like short shows, too.
Listen, you're talking to somebody who, on the reg, listens to multiple podcasts that are 4 to 5 hours long each.
I only listen to one or two podcasts occasionally, and they're amazing. But, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's been a long time since we've said this, only if they're just on YouTube and in one audio channel.
That's the best. And they're not even on YouTube anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
And why bother? Why even bother doing your podcast if you're not going to put it just on YouTube?
It's crazy talk. All right. I think we're done here.
Yes. So for Todd, this is Leonard closing out episode 305 of Longbox Heroes. And we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop.